Welcome to Hometown Alaska on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and today we are talking about redistricting in Alaska. My guest is Taylor Bickford, Executive Director from the Alaska Redistricting Board. If you have any questions or comments about redistricting, you can reach us at Inside Anchorage at 550-8433 or Outside Anchorage 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You can also reach us or take a look at some of the materials we have available for you on alaskapublic.org. So welcome, Taylor.
Thanks, Shelley. It's really good to be here and have the opportunity to talk to you today.
Great to have you here. So we wanted to start with some basics today by first hearing from you just a basic definition of redistricting and why Alaskans and why listeners out there should care about this topic.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Redistricting is a pretty complicated process, but there are some basic principles that are important to understand, as we get into the conversation of, some of the more in-depth issues associated with it. So redistricting is essentially the process of redrawing legislative election boundaries to adjust for changes in population. And that process really didn't happen for a big portion of our country's history. In the past, you would have districts that were very, very different in size. You might have a legislative district in, say, Texas, for example, in a rural area that had 30,000 people in it, and in an urban area, maybe it only had 10,000 people. And the problem was that you essentially had different levels of representation for citizens depending on what district you landed in. And in the 1960s, there were a series of really important U.S. Supreme Court cases that established the one person, one vote idea and the concept that, my vote should have equal weight and should be just as important. And my voice should be taken just as seriously as you or anyone else in the country. A lot of race issues is always involved in redistricting, and that was sort of behind those Supreme Court cases. You had situations where people were being discriminated against and minority groups were being discriminated against and sort of put into districts where maybe they shared it with, like I said, 40, 50,000 people, and another district might have been much smaller and had a much higher quality representation.
Okay. How long have we been doing this process in Alaska?
We've been doing it since statehood. And the rules for the Alaska redistricting process were first established in the Alaska Constitution. And we spent some time drawing districts without the one person, one vote principle. And then in the 60s, when those Supreme Court cases came down, the state actually had to go back and change some of the districts that they'd previously drawn. So this would be the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. This would be the sixth redistricting cycle in Alaska.
So there may have been some lessons learned along the way here.
Yeah, I think that, every redistricting cycle, each board is in a better position than the previous board was in. We look at the stage of the process that we're in now, and, the state litigation process is moving forward, and that's something that's happened to every redistricting plan in the state's history. There are always legal challenges. And you expect that. But this board, we only had three legal challenges, whereas the previous board had a total of nine that were eventually consolidated. And so you kind of learn from some of the mistakes, or not necessarily mistakes that were made, but, the court's always kind of adjusting and changing some of these concepts and their interpretation of the rules surrounding redistricting. And so, we felt like we're definitely, have learned a lot from some of those past mistakes, and we're in a better position than if we didn't have that information.
Well, let's take a step back and just hear from you really what the role or the purpose is of the Alaska Redistricting Board, and maybe if you could even share with us the composition of the board and your role.
Sure. Well, like I said, the Alaska Redistricting Board was first established at the Alaska Constitutional Convention. The rules were much different then than they are today, and the reason for that is that in 1998 there was a constitutional amendment that sort of changed the nature of the process. And the process begins with the census count. And so every 10 years, you have new census numbers that are reported. And that's the driving force behind redistricting, is those census numbers and the changes in district populations throughout the state. The way it works in Alaska is, you know, about a year before the census numbers are reported, the state puts together a redistricting planning committee. And you have five members, one member appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, two members appointed by the governor, one by the president of the Senate, and one by the Speaker of the House. And so this five-member group sort of starts laying the framework for the board. They start purchasing computers and finding a nice office space for the board to do their work in, and just kind of that administrative planning that has to be done so when the board gets appointed, you know, they can hit the ground running. They do their work for about, you know, a year, something like that. And then in the summer of 2010, in this process, board members started getting appointed. And it was the same process as with the planning committee. So the governor appoints two members, the Speaker of the House appoints a member, the President of the Senate appoints a member, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court appoints a member. Our five board members are, our chairman is former Senator John Torgerson out of the Kenai, Marie Green from Kotzebue, Jim Holm, a former representative out of Fairbanks, Bob Brody is a former Kodiak mayor and has been involved in politics for a long time in Kodiak. And we originally had a member from Southeast by the name of Al Clow, but he resigned at the early part of this year because he took a position with the state, and you can't work for the state and also work for the redistricting board. So we got a new member earlier this year, and her name is Peggy Ann McConaughey, and she was with us throughout the whole process of actually drawing. And so that transition actually worked out pretty well. So that's kind of the pre-phase. You have the planning committee, then the board gets appointed and starts to meet and starts to get ready for the job they have to do.
So where are we at in that process right now?
Well, and I saw on your website you had some good information about, you know, when we received the census data, and as it's pointed out on the website, it was March 1st that we received the census data. And the constitutional amendment that was put into place in 1998 requires the board to have a draft plan out 30 days after receiving that data. So we had our draft plans out in the middle of April. And then we hit the road for a public hearing tour and went to over 32 communities across the state, traveled, you know, we added up the air miles between everybody just to see, you know, how much we traveled. It was about 60,000 air miles between board members and staff. And so that was a big part of the process, was just getting out and getting on the road and kind of hearing from residents of Kotzebue, Bethel, Barrow, Dillingham, Juneau. You know, we really covered the whole state. Then the board is required to have that final plan adopted 60 days after the draft plan. And our final plan was adopted on June 13th, which then starts another 30-day clock. And that's the window for state legal challenges to be filed. That ended in the middle of July. And we, like I said, got three challenges to the plan. And that started the state litigation process. And so it's an expedited process. It doesn't last as long as a normal court case would, but it's still, you know, it's a pretty substantial case and there's a lot involved. And so, you know, we're just starting, you know, scheduling. We know that the trial will be in January. And so that's kind of where we are in the process.
So all of that should be wrapped up by next summer, you said.
Yeah, it has to be. Well, I guess it doesn't have to be, but everybody's goal and the court's goal certainly is to have everything wrapped up prior to the filing deadline for the 2012 elections. And that's the, you know, big sort of calendar item for us is, you know, we need to have new districts in place for the 2012 elections.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Hometown Alaska on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and my guest today is Taylor Bickford, Executive Director for the Alaska Redistricting Board. If you have comments or questions about redistricting, we would really like to hear from you. You can reach us inside Anchorage at 550-8433 or outside Anchorage at 1-888-353-5752. or also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And as Taylor mentioned earlier, we do have some resources available for you on our website, alaskapublic.org. If you click on that Hometown Alaska link, you'll see several links to what really we're going to talk about next, and that's the maps themselves. And so I'm wondering, Taylor, if you can explain a little bit to folks what's available also on our website and on your website. What are the maps that we're looking at? So we see board option one and board option two. What are folks looking at there?
Okay, well, on the board's website, we have all of the plans that were considered throughout the redistricting process. And that includes a few different things. It includes the draft plans that we adopted and took on the road. And that was board option one, like you said, and board option two were two draft plans that the board and our staff came up with to take on the road. But we also adopted a handful of plans from outside organizations and groups. There were a number of sort of nonprofit interest groups that were put together to track and contribute to the redistricting process. Groups like Alaskans for Fair Redistricting, Alaskans for Fair and Equitable Redistricting, Native corporations, local governments throughout the state. And so there's that set of materials, which is all the drafts, whether it was created by the board or created by an outside group. And then there's the final plan itself. And that's referred to either as the final plan or the proclamation plan. And that's available on our website. You can download maps. And on our website, there's basically a button on the homepage that says proclamation plan. And you click on that and can access materials from there.
And for folks that are listening, you can click on our website. We actually have a picture of the Anchorage District. And if you click on that link, you will see the whole state map pop up. So one of the other questions that I have is just in terms of the public process for you. So you said you took the maps on the road mm-hmm. and went from like community to community and got feedback. How did you figure out that process and really what did it look like? Were you sitting in a room with folks and having a conversation, or how were the meetings advertised? I mean, really, how did the public's voice get heard?
Well, the first thing we did is we looked at the communities that the last board had traveled to. We didn't want to leave out any communities that were traveled to last time, and we also wanted to add to that list because we felt like, you know, to the extent that we could, we wanted to get to as many locations as possible. And we started off, we put that list together, and then our board members all had input on, you know, different communities that should be added. And it was actually, it was a pretty, I'd say, complicated and unique process of just putting that schedule together. I mean, it was, it took up a lot of staff time just coordinating everybody's travel and figuring out how we could cover all these locations, because the Constitution mandates that we have these plans and draft plans adopted in such a short time frame. You really don't have a lot of time to go on this road tour. The way we went about it is we took our 5-member board and we split them up into teams. So we had one team was Chairman Torgerson and Bob Brody out of Kodiak. Another team was Peggy Ann McConaughey and then Marie Green out of Kotzebue. And then the third team was Jim Holm out of Fairbanks, and he traveled with our then executive director, Ron Miller. And they each kind of had their own set of hearing sites. The group I traveled with was Chairman Torgerson and Bob Brody, and we went to South Central sites in the Kenai Peninsula. We traveled to the Aleutians and went to Unalaska, Dillingham, Cold Bay, King Salmon, and the Peggy Ann McConaughey, Marie Green team went to Southeast, and then the other team kind of went through the interior. And it, quite honestly, the meetings and the style of the meetings really just depended on the site we were at. We had hearings that were a lot better attended than others, I'd say there was a wide array of comments and sort of just general, just kind of the nature of the meetings and how they flowed. I mean, some communities we went to, you had 40 people show up. They all had done their homework. They were all kind of on the same talking points and had the same concerns. And then other, communities we went to were less I'd say, intellectually engaged in the process, and they were really there to learn and just wanted to know how it was going to impact them. I'd say that the hearings in Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau, the more urban areas of the state, were the best attended, and they were also, I think you generally had a lot more diversity in terms of the kinds of comments we received. You might have, in Anchorage, for example, there were a lot of people that wanted to comment in Anchorage districts, but there were also comments that related to districts outside of Anchorage or just related to the redistricting plan as a whole. Whereas in a place like Cordova or Barrow, you generally had comments specifically related to their district and what kind of district do they wanted to end up in when it was all said and done.
So we actually have a caller online that may have a question about the public process himself.
Sure.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Ernie.
Hi, and I've told Taylor this before, but I thought they had an awesome open process. They had so many documents posted online and went to so many communities and streaming audio of their meetings, but the Aleutians East kind of thought they faltered at the finish line. Every plan for our region until 7 days until they adopted the final plan kept our region together, and then in that last 7 days they split us up, which was exactly what our mayor had asked that they not do. So we're just wondering about how that end game played out, but we do commend them on doing pretty good work. It was an amazing thing to do in 90 days. Thanks,
Ernie. And Ernie and I got to spend some time together actually on the public hearing tour I was just describing. He picked us up at one of the hearing sites and spent the day with us. And it was good getting to know him. And he was engaged throughout the whole process, and that was really helpful. I think that Ernie's comments and what we're seeing out of, say, maybe Fairbanks and other areas of the state really highlights the immense challenge that is presented by the redistricting process in Alaska. You know, the Alaska Supreme Court has in the past said that it's a task of Herculean proportions. Every court that looks at these issues always spends a lot of time, you know, saying up front, this is something that none of us envy. It's difficult. There are difficult decisions that have to be made. And ultimately, you can't make everybody happy. And that's something that we all kind of had to accept and learn the hard way over the course of the process. But the board's job was really to build a plan that was fair on a statewide basis and that was fair for all residents of the state. And there's really no easy way to do that. There's no clean way to do that. You can't build a redistricting plan in the state that satisfies state constitutional principles, federal constitutional principles, the requirements of the Voting Rights Act, and makes every local government and citizen in the state happy. And that was a really hard thing for our board to accept because, our board and for the most part our staff are all people that have been involved in public service and kind of go into something like this with the idea and understanding of, you know, we want to do the best job we can, and they take every public comment very seriously. And you know, this road tour we went on, I mean, it was hugely beneficial because we got to learn what communities needed. But then it was ultimately very difficult because we kind of had these, like I said, opportunities to connect with some of these areas, and then we had to realize, well, we in a lot of cases we're not going to be able to do the things that they want us to do. So in the case of the Aleutians, that was an issue that was ultimately driven by the Voting Rights Act. And there were plans that kept the Aleutians together, and Ernie works for the Aleutians East Borough. And the final plan we put out, there was one community that was removed from the borough and put in a different district. And that's never something you want to do if you can avoid it. But the board was required to comply with federal law, and the plans that kept the Aleutians area together would not have passed muster with the U.S. Justice Department in terms of how does the statewide plan impact the collective voting strength of Alaska Natives.
Well, thank you for your call, Ernie.
Thank you very much.
You are listening to Hometown Alaska on KSK Anchorage. Today we are talking about redistricting in Alaska. If you have any comments or questions about this topic, you can reach us inside Anchorage at 550-8433, outside Anchorage 1-888-353-5752, or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Taylor, you just mentioned the Federal Voting Rights Act, and can you talk a little bit more about that and explain for us how that relates to the redistricting process?
Yeah, I would love to. And the reason why is the Voting Rights Act in Alaska is, if not the most important factor for any board to consider, it's certainly a driving force between any process and will continue to be in redistricting processes in the future. And just to back up a little bit, you have essentially three sets of requirements that you have to follow when you're drawing districts. The first is the U.S. constitutional principles, and that is primarily equal protection, one person, one vote, and those sorts of things. You then have the Federal Voting Rights Act, and I'll get to that in a minute. And then third, you have the Alaska state constitutional principles. And those are the principles of contiguity, the idea that districts have to be, you know, touching, which is a little bit hard to do in Alaska. And that gets stretched a little bit because of like Southeast and the islands, and water is generally seen as is creating a contiguous district. Compactness, the idea that a district's, you know, shape should be a certain way. And then socioeconomic integration, which is the idea that a district's population should be socioeconomically integrated as near as practicable. And the court in the past has repeatedly said, when we look at these cases and when we review them, and here's our advice to the board on what you should do. First, you look at the U.S. Constitution, then you look at the Federal Voting Rights Act, and then you look at the Alaska State Constitution. So in cases, there are situations where you have conflicting standards, which you often do. You might be forced to do something to comply with the Voting Rights Act, understanding that you're going to be violating the state constitution as a result. And the court has said that's not an easy decision to have to make, but ultimately federal law trumps state law, and there is a legitimate governmental interest in complying with the Voting Rights Act, and ultimately that will, you know, explain some of the state constitutional issues. So the Voting Rights Act specifically was put into law in 1965, and it was in response to a lot of the issues that were taken up by the Supreme Court at the time. And Alaska is one of nine states that is covered under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, and that's the really important section when it comes to redistricting. You also have Section 2, which applies to everybody, and it protects racial minorities from being discriminated against or having their voice in the political process or their vote diminished. But Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act specifically deals with the idea of retrogression and the idea that the plan that you put forward has to at least maintain the same level of voting strength as the previous plan. And that's, like I said, something that eight other states have to deal with. You also have jurisdictions, say counties or school districts in other states that are covered. But Alaska's in this really unique position of being one of nine states that's covered in full. And so it very much drives the process. And the reason why is because federal law trumps state law. And so from the start of the process, the board decided, we're going to put a plan forward that complies with the Voting Rights Act, because we could put a plan forward that complies with the state constitution 100%. But if we're not complying with the Voting Rights Act, it's ultimately not, the plan will not be put, those new districts will not be put into place. And so it comes down to sort of an analysis of, first, the plan that we currently have. And that's referred to as the benchmark plan in redistricting terminology. And so the board hired an expert, and it's her name's Dr. Lisa Hanley, and she was the same expert that the last redistricting board used. And she comes in and first does an analysis of the current districts, and she looks at voting patterns. She looks at the set of elections between 2002 and 2010 and determines how many districts in the current plan can be considered effective Alaska Native districts, meaning these are districts where the Alaska Native population has the ability to elect their candidates of choice. So you set that standard, and then you have to make sure that the plan you're putting forward meets that standard. And there's a lot of sort of, it looks like we have to go to break, or we're good?
You're still good.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first part of our analysis was done, you know, this spring early on, and really guided the board so we understood the standards we had to meet. And then as we were drawing the plan, you know, she was there to advise us as to how the proposed districts would be handled by the Department of Justice. And whenever I talk about the Voting Rights Act, I always kind of get into some of these, you know, rabbit holes and worry that I'm, you know, maybe not explaining it too well, because it, like I said, it is very complicated. But it's essentially the idea that the plan you put forward has to maintain that same level of Alaska Native voting strength as the current plan.
Well, we want to talk a little bit more about that and ask you some specific questions to that regard, and
sure,
how it relates to the decreasing populations in a lot of our Alaska Native regions. So we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSK Anchorage.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Hometown Alaska on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Shelley Wade. Today, we are talking about redistricting in Alaska, and my guest is Taylor Bickford, Executive Director for the Alaska Redistricting Board. And before we took a short break, we were talking about the Federal Voting Rights Act and started to talk a little bit about the strength of a vote. And in particular, our listeners are interested in hearing more from you, Taylor, about the Alaska Native vote and at what we're seeing in the current census data in terms of a shift in population, and really a shift from rural Alaska to more populated urban areas. And so we have a question from a listener here, and I'm going to read it out loud. While the population of Alaska is increasingly concentrated in urban areas, and as a result, redistricting is shifting even more political power to urban settings, the reality is that much of Alaska's most important economic and natural resources remain located in depopulating rural areas. So this includes obvious resources like oil, but also fish and tourism. So to this listener, it seems like the state loses valuable perspective on issues related to development and conservation in rural Alaska through the redistricting process. So how do we really, through the process, how do you capture those perspectives when the populations have shifted so significantly?
Well, the board struggled a lot with the population shifts. There were the population shifts of Alaska as a whole, which was Southeast losing significant population, rural areas losing population, and then South Central and the urban areas of the state gaining population. And so obviously you're going to have a shift in power in response to that, because ultimately, this is a numbers-driven process, and the one person, one vote principle requires us to build districts that are of equal size. And you had that problem in the past where you might say, okay, this part of rural Alaska, you can have a district with 10,000 people, whereas in the Mat-Su, you're going to have a district that's twice as big. And we're going to do that because we feel it's important that this region has one representative, and this other region, we think that works. We're prohibited from doing that because of the U.S. Constitution. And so you start drawing these districts, and you at some point, maybe it's right when you start drawing, or you hit a certain point where you realize, you know, okay, either we've backed ourselves into a corner, you still have however many districts to go, and you have however many people left over, and you can only go into certain areas. But the point is, no matter what you do, you're going to have districts that stretch, say, from rural Alaska into urban Alaska. You're also going to have situations where districts in those regions are actually threatened. You know, you look at what happened in Southeast, and Southeast has five districts currently, but they lost population. And so we had to draw four districts in Southeast, you know, in response to that. And we added a district in the Mat-Su because of the huge population growth there. And those weren't discretionary decisions that were made. Those are just purely numbers driven. Here's how many people you have. How many districts are they entitled to? You know, there was a constitutional amendment that was obviously on the ballot in the 2010 general election. And if that would have passed, we would not have had to make some of the changes that we had that we were forced to make. And I think looking forward to the next redistricting process, Alaska needs to sort of take a pause and think about how do we want to be represented in the state legislature? And do we currently have the tools we need to make that happen? And my personal opinion is we probably don't. We've got 40 districts, and it may have worked, you know, 40 years ago. But I can tell you from living and breathing this process for almost the last year now, it was very, very difficult this year. It's only going to get harder as Alaska's demographics change. And if we don't make these districts smaller, the problem is not going to get any easier. And so that's something that our board has, you know, talked a lot about. And we ran some projections on what would the districts have looked like if we had 44 seats. And they would have looked mostly the same as they do now. We wouldn't have had to stretch rural districts into urban areas. Southeast would have potentially had the opportunity to keep their five districts. And so I think that's really the issue here. It's not, you know, our board or the next board, it's not really what can you do. It's, you know, they have to work with the tools that are given to them. So I think it's more a conversation the state needs to have of, you know, do we need to revisit that issue?
Well, I think some folks might be confused then, because so we see in an area like Southeast where the population has decreased, we do see a loss of a district.
Right.
But in the case of Anchorage and the Mat-Su, we see these really significant increases in population, but no additional representation. So for folks that are kind of looking from the Mat-Su or Anchorage perspective, why is that?
Well, it just comes down to the numbers. And actually, in the Mat-Su, they gained an entire House district. And so that's the fastest growing region of the state. And you've got growth rates at the statewide level. And let's say that the state grew by 20%. Let's just throw that out there. So if the state grew by 20% and Southeast stayed flat even, maybe they didn't even lose population, they're still behind now because their districts haven't grown enough to keep up with the rest of the state. But in the case of Anchorage and the Mat-Su, like I said, Mat-Su did gain an entire district, and there was significant growth in Anchorage, but it matched that level of statewide growth. And so the districts in Anchorage, if you take the most populated district and the least populated district, and you take the difference of that, that's what's called the district deviations, or the overall range between districts. This board drew the Anchorage districts as close to the ideal number as has ever been done in Alaska redistricting history. So the most populated district is less than 1% more populated than the least populated district. And the point is, the districts in Anchorage are all at the ideal number. You take the state's population, you divide it by 40 districts, you get the number 17,755, and you have to draw your districts as close to that as you possibly can. And Anchorage's 16 districts are all right at that number, and there was no additional population to work with. So it really just comes down to the numbers. And when you look at Anchorage Mat-Su, the growth is mostly reflected in those Mat-Su districts.
So we have a caller online. Matt from Anchorage has a question about the shifting House and Senate districts. Hi, Matt.
How are you this afternoon?
Good. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. You have a question for us?
Yeah. When I'm looking at the redistricting map, I certainly understand with shifting populations and the voters not having passed the initiative to add House and Senate districts that you have to work very hard for the one person, one vote. But one of the things I'm troubled with is I see in the combination of Senate districts that voters actually start, half the voters end up losing the senator they've known for a period. So you'll see somebody like Bert Stedman or Johnny Ellis that in the past they had two House districts that they represented, and now with the redistricting, one of those House districts is still their district, but there's a totally different House district that now they're representing. And it seems to me, from a voter's perspective, that's a real inconsistency that really starts harming the democratic process, because people sometimes have a hard enough time knowing, well, who is my representative? If all of a sudden the boundaries keep changing, a person who, you know, for a long time thought, say, well, Bert Stedman is my senator, and then discovers, well, he's not my senator anymore because the boundaries shifted, or the same thing with John Ellis or any numbers. I find that really troubling about the newest map, how it seems like there wasn't a real effort made to maintain consistency, especially among Senate districts. And I can take my answer off the line unless you have follow-up.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for the question. There are a number of states throughout the country that have incumbent protection as a constitutional or statutory redistricting principle. It's something that they're required to follow. But for the most part, you don't have that requirement. And in Alaska redistricting, there's no constitutional requirement to, say, protect incumbents.
Right, but even if it's not necessarily required, it still might be a very, very good idea as a matter of good democratic principles.
Well, and I think the issue for the board ends up being you have a set of, you know, principles that you're required to follow, and those take precedence. I mean, you're not going to put, you know, protecting any particular incumbent's exact district or you know, fiefdom or a set of voters over the other constitutional principles. So you have to deal with those first. And in Alaska redistricting, it's certainly never been something that that boards have even considered, really. I mean, the last redistricting process, there were 19 representatives who were ran against each other, and they all just so happened to come from the same political party. And that's not something that this board had any interest in doing. It's not about going out and intentionally trying to find ways to draw people out, but this board made the decision early on. It's certainly not about protecting them either. The districts that are ultimately drawn are drawn to best represent the voters of the district and the residents of the district. And that's the most important thing, is that the districts are fair for the residents and not necessarily the incumbent or the legislator that has served there for 20 years.
Right.
It's not about them. It's about the residents and the voters.
Right. But I'm not asking about the idea of protecting some incumbent. I'm suggesting that if a person has been living, say, in Midtown Anchorage for the last 20 years, the notion that that person has seen multiple changes in who's representing them, even though some of those people may have been around for a lot longer, but just the boundaries keep changing. I think that at some point starts becoming a disservice to the voter that boundaries are changing so rapidly. And certainly when you describe Anchorage as a place that has the same, really doesn't have a lot of the concerns that you have to deal with in rural Alaska, when you're seeing really rapid changes of boundaries in both House districts and Senate districts, it seems like the voter's really losing out on that, because an average voter oftentimes doesn't know who their representative is. And if that person keeps changing just because the boundaries are changing, I think that makes it even harder for the citizen to really be engaged in democracy.
Well, it comes down to the numbers. And no matter what you do, the district lines are going to shift and people's representatives are going to change. It's an issue that's really outside of the board. I think if Alaska wants to have that conversation and say, should we add this, you know, do we need another constitutional amendment to change the rules? Do we need to make this something that is considered at the same level as the other constitutional requirements, and that's a conversation that should certainly be had. But the board, again, their interpretation of what is fair and what, you know, the process should be about is the district lines, not necessarily saying, okay, this incumbent has been in this district, these are his voters, and we need to make sure that he keeps the same set of voters, and you know, that we're going to in some way protect that person's district. And I understand the idea that the citizens ultimately, what you're saying is that the citizens ultimately benefit from having, you know, representatives that they're familiar with. But I think if you look at the shifts in the legislature, regardless of redistricting, I think Alaskans have an ability to adapt to new representation, to learn. I think Alaskans are engaged in the political process and do take the time to understand who their legislators are. And I think that, you know, sometimes the argument could certainly be made that new representation is ultimately a good thing for democracy. And that's just something that, like I said, the state of Alaska will have to think about as it looks forward to the next redistricting process.
Thanks for your question, Matt.
Thanks again for having me on.
Thank you. So, Taylor, maybe related to Matt's concerns, really, to what degree do politics affect the boundaries? So does it matter, for example, which party controls the legislature when the process is happening, when those decisions are being made? And if so, is that really a fair process?
Well, again, it sort of depends on where you are, what state we're talking about. I know this conversation is centered on Alaska, but if you look at states throughout the country, most redistricting processes are run out of the state legislature. And those are viciously political processes where you've got a party that controls the process, and it's in the legislative process, and you're competing with other bills, and that's a just purely and viciously political process. You have states like Alaska that have an independent board that's separated from the legislature, and in Alaska's case, it's separated from the executive branch too. The governor in a lot of states, even where you have an independent board, still has veto power over the plan. And so again, that's another political force that can really drive a process. If you know the governor has veto power over your plan, then you're going to make sure that the governor and his party and his friends in the legislature all agree with the plan. But you don't have that in Alaska. And so what you have in Alaska is you have five members who are appointed by various politicians, ultimately. And redistricting is like anything else, whether it's creating bills or voting or anything in our lives. You can never remove politics from it completely. But what you can do is you can set rules in such a way, and you can have transparency in the process. You can have citizens have the ability to come witness the lines being drawn, engage in the public process. And that's how you get rid of the politics. And this board, you know, like I said, all of our public hearing tour, our meetings were all completely open to the public. We had live streaming of the meetings, and we had webinar access to the meetings. So someone in Nome had the same level of access as someone in Anchorage. And that was our goal. You open up the process, you follow the rules, and that ultimately takes the politics out of it. Am I going to say that they can ever be completely removed? Of course not. But you really can't say that about anything. And I think you always hear people say, oh, well, we need to take this out of the political process, or, you know, we need to, this needs to be a nonpartisan redistricting. And I think every redistricting wants to do a fair job in a nonpartisan way, at least in Alaska, for the most part, and certainly with our board. But you can't ever take all of the politics out of anything unless you have robots drawing the plan, and I don't even know how that works. So it's definitely something that is part of the process, but you avoid it by following the rules and having transparency.
Well, maybe an additional follow-up question related to that issue of fairness is, you know, again, seeing that shift in the Alaska Native population and concern that really Alaska Native people have had the opportunity to provide feedback in the process. So we have a question from a listener. How does or did the board address increased Native populations in urban areas?
It's something that the board looked at. We you know, when you first get the understanding of, for Voting Rights Act concerns, what are we dealing with in the benchmark plan? How many Alaskan Native districts do we have that we need to then match in the new plan? One thought was, well, we've had this huge increase in urban areas, Native population, and maybe there's an opportunity to draw a Native majority district or an effective Native district in, say, Anchorage or Fairbanks or one of these areas. And when you look at it and when our board looked at it and our staff, it's actually impossible to do. And the reason why is because in the rural areas of the state, in a place like the Wade Hampton area, which is about 90% Alaska Native, you know, no matter how you draw the lines, it's going to be an effective Alaska Native district. In Anchorage, you have between 20 and 25,000 Alaska Natives, depending on how you
And that number's increasing.
Yeah, and it's always increasing. But they're spread out evenly amongst all the census blocks throughout Anchorage. So there isn't, say, an area where you can find 17,000 people and, you know, half of that population is going to be Alaska Native. It's impossible to do. And so that's something the board looked at and thought, you know, this would be cool if this was a way to sort of address the Voting Rights Act issue, but it was ultimately something that wasn't possible to do. And actually, none of the alternative plans from Native organizations, Native corporations, from any of the organizations that were engaged in the process, none of them had a Native district in an urban area. With that said, it's something that impacts the process indirectly because, like we've talked about, you've got a lot of Alaska Natives moving from rural areas into urban areas. And the impact of that is it's much harder to draw Alaska Native districts in rural areas because you're losing population and you're losing Native population. So that's the impact that it has on the process.
Well, if we just continue to play that out then and there's no increase in the number of districts, what does the future look like? So we were looking at 2034 population estimates earlier, and it's pretty astounding, the real significant decrease in most rural areas.
We're going to have a real problem on our hands. And I think this cycle was the first time that the population shifts and the Voting Rights Act and the one person, one vote, that all these principles really collided and came to a head. In the past, we've always had a trend of this migration into urban areas. We've always had the Voting Rights Act issues. We've always had the one person, one vote issues, but they've been moving relatively slowly, and they never really came to that critical mass where you had to shake things up so significantly. But this time, when you looked at the census data and laid it out, if you look at the Native districts in the interior and in Western Alaska, to maintain those districts, you had to find 9,000 additional people, right? And there's no clear place to do that. Where do you find 9,000 additional people from? And more importantly, for the Voting Rights Act, where do you find 9,000 people that are not going to then lower the percentage of Natives in the districts you're drawing and get you in trouble with the Voting Rights Act? So in this process, it was extraordinarily difficult. And we were fully engaged with the Alaska Native community. We gave three specific opportunities for them to come in and give us ideas and plans, and we still had trouble with it. One of our board members, Marie Green, who's CEO of Nana Corporation, she really, at the end, drove the configuration of those rural districts. I mean, our board was all involved, but she was definitely at the forefront of that. And she struggled with it. It wasn't easy for her. It wasn't easy for any of our board members. And I can tell you that if we don't add districts to the legislature, this problem is going to be significantly worse in 2020. If we're talking about 2034, I mean, I don't even know where to begin to think about how that would look. But you're either going to have Native districts literally going away. So we have 9 effective Native districts now. We have 9 effective Native districts in the current plan. I don't know that you can get to 9 in 2020 no matter what you do. And if you can get there, then you're going to have districts, you know, they're not just going to go into Fairbanks for population. They're going to go into Anchorage for population. They're going to go into the Mat-Su for population. And we're going to have a situation on our hands where we have to ask ourselves, what is our political representation all about?
Well, we have a caller. Elizabeth is calling from Anchorage. And maybe, Elizabeth, you have a question about keeping representation. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much. I'll be brief. Matthew's comments a couple moments ago kind of alarmed me. The thought of having to keep the same representation and the same lines that actually disenfranchises other people in areas that might have grown bigger, for instance. Taylor, what can you say about keeping these lines and how it may disenfranchise people as a result, because that population is not realigned and reproportioned? I'll get off the line. Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I would just kind of reiterate what I said before, which is the board's job is to adjust lines based on the numbers. And if you start trying to draw lines specifically with incumbents in mind, you get into a situation where that starts to drive the process. And our board didn't think that that was a good idea, and I would say that the last redistricting board certainly didn't, and there was, you know, a lot more incumbents paired, and so this board, I think, struck a good balance between not necessarily making that the top priority, but also not going out of your way to try to do it either. So it comes down to what's representation all about, and how do you interact with your district? Is it, you know, the community that you're in and your socioeconomic integration and common interests of a district, or is it who's my legislator and that's all I care about? So I think that that's just a decision the board made, and the next board might have a different opinion.
Well, it looks, Taylor, like we're running out of time, but we have maybe time for one more question.
Sure.
And that's really what happens next in this process, and how can Alaskan residents and voters stay tuned?
The next step in the process is we'll be filing for preclearance with the U.S. Justice Department, and that's actually something we started last night. We started submitting our materials, and we'll have that process hopefully fully submitted by tomorrow. The Justice Department will then review it and ultimately determine if we pass the Section 5 review, and then we'll be going into the state litigation process. So check out our website. It's www.akredistricting.org. You can get our contact info there, and certainly call us with any questions or concerns you might have.
Well, this has been a packed great hour. Thanks to my guest, Taylor Bickford, for being here today. If you would like to continue to talk about this issue, join KSK on Facebook. You can find our links on our new website, alaskapublic.org. Coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Charles Woolforth to talk about the Alaska State Fair. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Speck is our web editor and audio engineer. Thank you for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Shelley Wade.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.